Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on drought in America when we come back. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, you know, we Americans produce grain for export, but then we import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply in this country is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support the Global 2000 Population Reduction Program. Now, globalization may be good for business, but globalization is bad for you and it's bad for me. Now, back in 1940, we all had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year or more. Today, Americans have a 3-day supply on average in our refrigerators. And we believe in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all forever. But over the past 60 years, we Americans have traded a 1-year food supply in everybody's house for 3 days. Now, these global 2,000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years, so says the Club of Rome. These evil madmen with their Global 2000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause, unless you and I live for ours. And let me show you from the scripture how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now, the number 417-273-4967. And remember, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, why don't you go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about drought. Drought, it's not nearly as dramatic as a flood. It's because it's so long and drawn out. It goes on for years and years and years, and it kills its victims slowly and inexorably over a long period of time, years and years and sometimes decades. A flood like Hurricane Katrina comes in, and the next day, you're destroyed. It's over and done with. It's kind of like Noah's flood, you know. In just a few days, everybody was dead, and there were a few survivors. And the flood just destroys everything. It destroys your house, your barns, your cattle, knocks your fences down, kills the vegetation, silts up your fields. I mean, it is just one hell of a mess, but it's over. And then you can go right back to rebuilding. But the drought that occurred here in the United States back in the 1930s and the Dust Bowl years was slow and it went on for years and years and years, from about 1930 to about 1938. And it drove those people right off the land in Arkansas and Kansas and Oklahoma and Texas, and they moved out to the West. They moved out to California. Now, the West is not super endowed with water. It's a big piece of real estate, and there's a few big rivers. And you have to irrigate California and Oregon and Washington. You'll get out there in the West, and you'll see that irrigation is the primary means by which people make their living on the land out there. You don't get rain like you do here in the Midwest and in the East. And that's not bad. In fact, it's probably even better, because when you go to grow grapes, you know, it doesn't rain on them. They irrigate them from the bottom, and you get better products that way. And in California, back in the 1950s, we Americans, well, the Californians in this case, produced 57% of the table vegetables that all of America ate. Think about that. Nearly 60% of all of the table vegetables in America were produced right there in the San Joaquin and Sacramento Valley from the irrigation water out of the mountains. And then it worked like a heck of a deal. And they built all kinds of reservoirs out there. And when we broke off last time, we were talking about these reservoirs. A reservoir is like money in the bank out in the West. I mean, that when that thing is full, I mean, your bank account's just loaded with money. Because that water, when it comes down out of the mountains, down onto the fields, produces crops. That's where the money is. And without that water, there's no crops down in the valley. And that's the bottom line. Now, I showed you that of the various reservoirs out in Colorado, I hit four or five of them here for you, or ten maybe. The Adobe Reservoir, 29% full. Continental Reservoir, 10%. Here's one here, Great Plains Reservoir, zero. It's empty. Fruitland, 9%. Horse Creek, empty. And the whole brook, empty. Now, there's some averages over here from the various states over here. For instance, Idaho. The Idaho reservoirs, there's quite a bunch of them. The total of 23 reservoirs is 61% of the total storage capacity. You've got a little over half there in Idaho. In Montana, they've only got five reservoirs reporting. The drought in Montana is so bad they're not even reporting. Those reservoirs are virtually empty. Only five have water. Helena Valley is the best one. It's got 79%. Como has 26%. And then here's another one here of nine reservoirs, 52%. Six reservoirs, 59% in Nevada. New Mexico, of a total of 13 reservoirs, you got 41%. So as you go through the various states here, they averaged out all of the reservoirs. You know, you take a look, here's 57%. And see if I got another state in here that's reporting eight reservoirs in Washington State, 54%, Wyoming. 46 reservoirs, total of four reservoirs, 46%. In other words, at this point in the drought, our reservoir systems have about half the water in them, half of their storage capacity. If they were full, we would say we've got money in the bank. When they're half full, well, then we can say, well, you know, we're not broke. We've still got half of our money. We've got half left. Now, we're into the drought for 5 years, and we're down to half. If this thing goes on for five more years. In fact, I showed you last time that if Lake Powell goes down for another year, through the year 2006, they won't be able to generate any electricity. Now, at the year after, that would be next year, 2007. We haven't seen drought like this in the United States. We haven't. This is the worst that it's been, and according to dendrochronologists, that's the guy that looks at tree rings, we haven't had anything like this in 500 years here. Now, civilizations have been destroyed by drought, and a little later on in the series here, I'm going to take you through the Anasazi Indians down in the Southwest who were destroyed from off the land because of drought. And the God of the Israelites told them, this is Moses speaking now in Deuteronomy chapter 4. This Deuteronomy chapter 4, it's kind of a neat chapter to read. It's one of the chapters on education. It's where God instructed Moses. He said, now, go around, tell the people what the outcome of this is going to be. We've got a contract. That contract was negotiated back in Exodus chapter 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, verse 8. That's called the Old Covenant. And in verse 7, this is Exodus 24, verse 7, the people said, all that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient. That contract was ratified by your great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy 84 generations back. And the benefits of it inure to all of the heirs and assigns forever. Forever. I don't know how long forever is, but I do know this, it's not up yet. Now that much we do know. How long? We don't. No, but, you know, is it up yet? And the answer is no. Still in full force and effect. So those of us living in America today are looking forward to the Great Tribulation. It hasn't happened yet. Had a guy write me a letter here, and he said, God would never do what you're discussing on the radio to the United States of America. And I took heart with that. I said to myself, God, that's wonderful. If that guy's right, and I hope he is, that means that I can be a party to and a member of a criminal institution, and I can do anything I want, and I never have to pay the penalty for it. I can always get away with it. Now, my problem is that I'm suspicious about that. I'm suspicious about breaking laws and then getting away with it. I want to do that. I'm no different than anybody else. I want to break every one of the Ten Commandments, and I don't want to pay any penalties. I want to violate every one of the laws of God, and I don't ever want to have any repercussions that come from it. I just have this nagging problem, you know, just this nagging doubt in my mind as to whether or not I can get away with that. This guy evidently thinks that you can. That we can do whatever we want to do to whoever we want to do it to, and we'll never suffer any penalties. There'll never be any droughts. There'll never be any hurricanes like Katrina. There will never be any debts. There'll never be any wars. There'll never be any comeuppance that come. So I'm a little suspicious. So Deuteronomy chapter 4 kind of tells you the story here. Listen to this. In verse 6, he says, keep therefore and do them, speaking of the law, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations, which shall hear all of these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. A country that has a law that says, thou shalt not kill, is a wise and understanding people. A law that says, thou shalt not commit adultery, is a law that belongs to a wise and understanding people. A law that says, thou shalt not steal, comes from a wise and understanding people. Well, that's what God says. And of course, here in America, you know, you got your president hammering one of his interns under the desk in his Oval Office over here practicing adultery. And we, 72% of us thought, well, that's pretty good. That's a real leader. That was Bill Clinton, remember that? God says that if you don't practice adultery, you're a wise and understanding people. Our president over here is practicing adultery under the desk. Is he a wise and understanding president? And, you know, that's a choice that you got to make in life. I didn't think that was a very wise decision. Even Clinton later on said, well, he only did it because he could, and it probably wasn't one of the brighter moments in his life or in his career. But God goes on to verse 7, he says, for what nation is there so great who has God so nigh unto them as the eternal our God is in all things that we call upon or call upon him for? And what nation is there that's so great that has statutes and judgments so righteous as all of this law which I set before you this day? And can you go to the Chinese Reds in China and see a law like this? You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make unto you any graven images. You shall not take the name of the eternal your God in vain and remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Anything like that in China or Japan, Tibet. So our God said, hey, this is a pretty good law. Then you people ought to practice this. He went on a step further over there, and he said over in verse 13, he says, and he declared unto you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, even 10 commandments, and he wrote them upon 2 tables of stone. And the Eternal commanded me at that time to teach you statutes and judgments, that you might do them in the land whether you go over to possess it. Now, we came over here from Europe to possess North America, you Canadians and we Americans here. And we came over and we possessed, you know, a pretty good chunk of real estate, and it's not a bad piece of ground, if you stop and think about it. I mean, you Canadians might have got a little short shrift there on the cold weather. But, hey, listen, have you taken a look at your tar sands out there in Alberta? You're sitting on top of 3 trillion barrels of oil out there. I mean, it may be a little chilly, but hey, that's not getting shorted now. That's $3 trillion that they got inventoried. One guy said he thought that there's probably twice that much, 6 trillion barrels. See how much money that is. If we were to, you know, just get $50 a barrel, let's not be pigs, huh? $50 a barrel times 6, that's $300 trillion, isn't it? 6 times 50 is 300. Now you get 6 trillion. Isn't that $300 trillion? Let me see if I'm thinking here right. $50 a barrel. You got 6 trillion barrels. 50 times 6. See, my little calculator's only got about 9 or 10 digits out here. I couldn't do the whole trillion out here, but I can do 6 times 50. That's 300. Yeah, it looks like about $300 trillion to me. Okay, that doesn't sound too shabby. A little chilly. A lot of oil. A lot of money. So you Canadians didn't get shortchanged up there. But I'm not so sure that you guys are practicing these Ten Commandments over here that you were instructed to practice in Chapter 4. And I'm not down on you. I'm just reminding you that under the terms of the contract, under the terms of this old covenant over here, you're entitled to that, but your half of the deal, remember, was to practice the Ten Commandments, and God's half of the deal was to deliver the payment. Now, he's delivered the payment, and your forefathers practiced this law. I mean, you know, 100, 200 years ago, you Canadians up there practiced these Ten Commandments. Well, I'll accept the fourth. You didn't keep the Sabbath day on the Sabbath, but you were keeping the Sabbath day on Sunday. And I remember as a kid, we practiced the Sabbath in this country. The world stopped on Sunday. As recently as 1940, in the United States of America, the world stopped on Sunday. Nothing worked. You couldn't buy a gallon of gas. So if you were going to go to church, you better have gas in the tank because you're not going to buy any on Sunday. That was as recently as 1940. We even had laws in this country called blue laws. Now, we're talking about drought, and I'm trying to point out to you over here that, hey, look, there's a cause and effect relationship here. And this cause and effect relationship is explained here in Deuteronomy 4. He says, take you therefore, verse 15, this is Deuteronomy 4, 15, take you therefore good heed to yourselves. That's kind of a pretty stringent statement there. You know, you guys better sober up and pay attention. Because you saw no manner of similitude on the day that the Eternal spoke unto you in Horeb out of the midst of the fire, lest you corrupt yourselves and make you a graven image, the similitude of any figure, the likeness of male or female. We Americans have a great big idol that we worship in this country. It's called the Statue of Liberty. It sits out in New York Harbor. We put it on our money. We sing songs to her. We got it from our brothers, the French. They're idol worshippers over there, and they thought it'd be a good idea for us. So they gave us that free of charge. It was just a present. just like, you know, you need a present. You need a cobra for a present. I'm going to send you one in the mail. You need a rattlesnake for a present. Well, anyway, he told us not to do that, but, you know, we didn't listen. So we've got our gods over here in the United States. That's not the only one, but that's the number one god. Then he comes over here in verse 25. This is the kicker. Listen to this. He says, when you shall beget children and children's children, and you shall have remained long in the land, and you shall have corrupted yourselves and make graven images or the likeness of anything, and shall do evil in the sight of the Eternal your God to provoke him to anger. You give him the finger here. I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day that you shall soon utterly perish from off the land whereunto you go over Jordan to possess it. You shall not prolong your days upon it, but you shall utterly be destroyed. That's why I thought I'd bring this drought thing to your attention, because Bob Schieffer isn't doing it. I noticed here that NBC is playing the Winter Olympics, and CBS isn't telling you the story about this drought. Now, they're reporting on Hurricane Katrina. Now, you people down there on the Gulf Coast, that's three states, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and a little bit in Alabama. I guess we could give you four states. Alabama didn't get hit very hard, but four states are on the Gulf Coast. And then Texas is also in the north engaged in this drought thing. That's Texas and Oklahoma. That's where we're having wildfires out here on the prairie. And then you get seven states in the west on the Colorado River system. And then you've got 10 states that begin in the west, like Montana, and come down through the Midwest over here to the Mississippi River that are engaged in this drought. Now, 10 and 7 is 17, and then 2, Texas and Oklahoma, is 19. And then you've got Louisiana, Mississippi, and we'll call Alabama, that's 3 more. That's 22 states. 22 states now in out of 50 in our country over here that are getting the double whammy. That is, we're not getting rain in due season. We're getting too much rain or not enough. Too much or not enough. Here's another little thought for you. All wealth comes out of the ground. Just mull that over in your mind. All wealth comes out of the ground. Now, when we get rain in due season, when we go out to work, we get a good day's pay. We get good results coming out of our crops. We get good results, you know, that out of our jobs and so on. You people down in New Orleans are not getting good results out of your jobs because you haven't even got a place to live. And you people out here on the Colorado River aren't getting good results because you've got this shortage and you got this nagging problem. Now, you're living in Los Angeles drinking Colorado River water. And so far, you're living off your bank account, which was stored in Lake Mead and Lake Powell. But you know that's coming to an end here if this drought doesn't end. Now, in the past, the droughts have always ended just in the nick of time, and we've always muddled through. It's kind of like those hurricanes and New Orleans. You always dodged the bullet, but you know there came that inevitable last shot, and you didn't dodge that bullet. And this drought, you know, at some point in time, you've been through several of them, and you're not paying attention now to the Ten Commandments. You're not paying attention to God. So I thought I'd bring this to your attention here in Deuteronomy 4. There's one more kicker over here in Deuteronomy 28, last verse. Listen to this. The Eternal shall bring you into Egypt again with ships. By the way whereof I spoke unto you, you shall see it no more again. And there you shall be sold unto your enemies for bondsmen and bondwomen, and no man shall buy you. That's Deuteronomy 28:68. That's national captivity. National captivity. Now, I want to point out to you that as I speak here, there's a little flap going on over these six ports. It seems that an Arab country called the United Arab Emirates, little piece of real estate over there on the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, on the Persian Gulf. Anyway, they got a little money over there, a little oil money. They got the money from the United States. See, we gave them the money for the oil. Now, they've got the money, so they bought a company up in England that operates ports. And so they went and bought that English company up there. That's because they've got all the money and we've got all the debt. And this English company is running six ports over here, and so they're going to run these six ports here in the United States. And it's causing quite a little flap. I wanted to point out that the port of Long Beach is being run by the Chinese Communist government in China. Do you know that? That just scared the living hell out of me. See, the Chinese have said that they are going to destroy us. The Arabs haven't said as much. I don't think they like us very well, but I think that's what they've got in mind. I don't think the Arabs are exactly the friendliest people in the world toward Americans. Not that I can blame them, no. I'm not saying, you know, that we've treated the Arabs very well. I'm just pointing out that from our point of view, as just an average Joe Sixpack American, I don't think that, you know, after you've been shacking up with some guy's wife over here, he's going to be exactly your hunting buddy, you know. And then the Chinese over there, they never have been too friendly to us. I mean, you know, we've been over there raping, robbing, and pillaging those people, you know, for hundreds of years, and so they're not too happy with us either. Now, you take those two groups of people and you turn your ports over to them. And so, you know, even the liberals in Congress, even the conservatives in Congress are getting a little bit uppity about that deal. And I wanted to point out Deuteronomy 4 and Deuteronomy 28 to you in the context of this drought, where God said, you will not prolong your days upon the land. And I suspect that that includes you Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders also. So I thought I'd pass that on, just make your day, wasn't it? But you know, if you don't know that there's a problem, you don't have to do anything about it. But if you know there's a problem, then you might have to do something about it at some point in time. Now, with that much out of the way, let's take a look here at this shortage of snow over here. You know, we're talking about the, when we broke off last night, the Missouri River. Now, that's not some little Mickey Mouse puddle. I mean, we're talking about the second biggest river in the nation, the biggest being the Mississippi. Now, this is the second biggest, and if you're talking about a mistake that was made, see, the Mississippi River shouldn't be called the Mississippi. It should be called the Missouri River, because normally you name a river based upon the length of it. Well, in the old days, see, they thought that they knew how long the Mississippi was, starts off up there in Minnesota and runs down to the Gulf. And they said, well, that's a bigger river than this tributary. So they thought that the Missouri River was the tributary to the Mississippi. The truth of the matter is that that river is longer than the Mississippi, and it's the biggest of the tributaries, and actually, they made a mistake when they named it. But it is the biggest river, drains the biggest watershed in the nation. And it's in drought. Now, of course, if you're living, you know, in New Jersey, you know, you're sitting there saying, well, so what? That's not a problem to me. I pointed that out to you last time. Boys and girls, you guys in New Jersey that are working in factories that are making things for us to buy here in Missouri and North and South Dakota and so on, if we're suffering from drought, you don't have a very good customer here. You're not selling much to those people down there in New Orleans. That hurricane down there puts you people out of business, and when it comes to selling stuff to people in New Orleans, they don't have any money. They're wiped out. Hell, they don't even have a house. Furthermore, it's an added burden to the rest of us because now we got to go down there and rebuild their houses. That hurricane down there didn't do anybody any favors. That was a slap in the face. It was worse than that. But it was at least a slap in the face. And I pointed out to you last time, you know, we have a deal. We have a contract with our God, and we're in breach of contract. And this drought out here isn't an accident, and that hurricane wasn't an accident either. That's not happenstance. That's not caprice. That's a slap in the face. And he says, I'm gonna make it worse than that. Now, if you don't think this is bad, you wait until the next round comes, because it's gonna get worse. Now, there's more to it. For nearly a decade, the West drought has crept across more familiar terrain. Dead forests in California and New Mexico, shrinking desert reservoirs in Arizona, Utah, and Nevada, vast wildfires in Alaska, and brown lawns everywhere. Meanwhile, a less visible deficit has wilted the Missouri's headwaters region. This winter, Montana golfers were playing on courses normally buried in white April, or in white, that's snow, until April or May. Lack of snow scuttled snowmobile and dog sled events. The worst has arrived almost exactly 200 years after Meriwether Lewis and William Clark reached the river source on their westward march for a route to the Pacific. In July of 1805, the explorers stopped at what today is the Three Forks, Montana area, where three tributaries form the river. In his journal, Lewis took note, with customary misspelling, of how full the Jefferson, Madison, and Gallatin rivers were. All of them run with great velocity, and they throw out large bodies of water. I want to point out here that Lewis, when he wrote this down, he was not misspelling those words. He was sounding them out. We used to learn spelling here by sound. Of course, it's look and say today, but but there was a time, you know, when we used to sound words out. Lewis might not recognize the streams this spring and summer. An index that measures available water supplies lists 39 of Montana's 52 rivers in very dry conditions. So up in Montana, 114,000 miles of real estate up there, 39 out of 52. So let's just plug that one in. You've got 75% of your rivers up there in Montana in drought condition. The big reservoirs would be in far better shape, says Governor Schweitzer, if not for political decisions that favor what he calls barge traffic that doesn't exist on the lower river in the state of Missouri. Shipping has long been a sore point, and states upriver, dependent on tourism, complain that federal managers release too much reservoir water for barge traffic. States in the lower basin, where the Missouri is a channelized ditch, adapted to commercial traffic, claim the feds hold back too much in the lakes, threatening river transport of goods. Farmers fear if barge traffic is cut off, railroads and trucking companies will charge higher rates and cripple agriculture. See what your problem is? You've got a multitude of uses, and you've got barges down here. You've got irrigation that comes off of here. You've got cities that depend upon it for their water supplies and so on. You got power plants that depend upon it for cooling, and on it goes. And when one group of people over here, you know, when there's a shortage, you know, then all of a sudden then the groups of people that use the river, you know, the ecologists say, well, gosh, you got to let more water out so that we can protect the sturgeon. Okay, well, you got all these competing interests. Now here we are, walking across the desert with a canteen that's half full of water. And we're fighting among ourselves over how we're going to use this last little bit of water that we got left. Now, when we were obeying the Ten Commandments and we had a good relationship with our God, the river was full, the tributaries were running with great velocity, we didn't have any problems. The problems come, boys and girls, from the violation of the terms and conditions of the contract. And, of course, we teach this violation of the terms and conditions in our schools, and we call it evolutionary philosophy. We not only don't recognize God, we not only don't practice His laws over here, we take a step further and we teach our children not this law, which is what He told us to teach them. We teach them the exact opposite. We teach them the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools. And then we expect God to make it rain on us at the right time and give us all the benefits under the terms and conditions of the contract. And as I pointed out earlier, if I remodeled your kitchen and we had a term or condition in the contract and I didn't fulfill it, should I expect you to write the check and pay me even though I didn't do that which I agreed to? I don't think you'd pay me, and I'm suspicious that God is probably going to start withholding payment from us. Hang on here. Let me give you a reminder here at the midway point in the program that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Or call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. All right, back to the drought. This is the Missouri River we're talking about here. By law, the Corps of Army Engineers must manage the river for 8 different uses in commerce, recreation, ecology, and flood control. In a drought, we have to try to provide service to each of those, but at a reduced level, says Paul Johnston of the agency's Omaha office. But if the reservoir storage slips below 31 million acre feet, and it is now about 35 million acre feet and falling, getting close to the critical 31 million now, the Corps must cease flows for barge traffic. Unless the forecast changes, the Missouri will hit that navigation preclude next year. And the Corps already plans to cut short this year's season by 2 months. Now, even if navigation flows cease, the water savings will be small, Johnson says, because the Corps still must supply drinking water downstream. And he says the lakes might only rise a foot or two this season. The drought also could muffle a tourism boom expected from the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial. We're very concerned, says Clint Blackwood, the executive director for the observance in Montana, where some of the biggest gatherings have been planned. See, this tourism now is kind of a big thing, too. Now, if Montana has a wildfire season like it did in 2000, when nearly a million acres burned, Blackwood knows what could happen. The news media will report that Montana's on fire, he says, and it takes only a little bit of that, and people then say, well, I'm not going to Montana this year. But the most visible sign of drought remains on the reservoirs, like Sacagawea, named for the Indian woman who guided and translated for Lewis and Clark. Her name is often spelled Sacagawea. Well, it's down 50 feet from its high water mark in 1997. By summer's end, Lake Oahe could be 54 feet below its record level that same year. To fish, take your own water. Alan Burke, publisher of the Emmons County Record in Linden, North Dakota, says, many locals have sold their boats, and he recounts a grim joke told in town, is that you can go fishing, but you have to take your own water. And this winter was the first in memory without ice fishing in nearby Beaver Bay, an inlet off of Lake Oahe, just above the South Dakota line, and that's because Beaver Bay is gone. So is most of the tourist trade at Bosch's Bayside, a small resort there. People don't come here anymore, laments Randy Bosch, 47, who says he had just 4 overnight campers in his 40-space RV park in all of 2004. He may have to close for good this year. Bosch says he doesn't go down anymore to where the bay used to be except when the TV crews come to shoot drought footage. I can't, he explains, I just get too upset. Well, I don't blame him. I'd be upset, too. And you say in New Jersey, well, that's just one guy and too bad for him. But that's repeated not just by that guy, but by thousands, thousands of drought victims up and down the river. And as I said, when this guy, you know, isn't making money off of his boat landing and his RV park, he's not spending money buying your products in New Jersey. Multiply that by tens of thousands of people, and all of a sudden, there's a ripple effect that goes through our economy, which already is strained to the limit. Now, going back to the Colorado River, let's take a look here at the drought diminishes the river. Ranchers, cities near the headwaters are last in line for the water. In Colorado, down the hill from the hayfields where Dwayne Scholl isn't growing hay and the pastures where he isn't grazing cattle, the Colorado River carves a narrow path, weakened by another poor snowmelt at its headwaters, 40 miles upstream, but still strong enough to dominate the landscape.
Scholl's ranch rambles over 1,600 acres in the foothills of the high Rocky Mountains. His house is a dusty ride up a gently curving road, hidden from the highway and the rest of the valley. It's a small creek which winds through one side of his place, spitting out ditches at irregular intervals. On paper, Scholl holds rights to the main river. But like a lot of the other ranchers on Colorado's western slope, he takes the water from the creek, a tributary that probably won't last through the season. Scholl's right is for 35 cubic feet a second, but the most that he has pulled this year is 8 cubic feet a second. Some of that he leaves for his downstream neighbor. Now, if it isn't in the stream, it doesn't make any difference how much of a water right we have, said Scholl, who planted only a third of a hay crop this year and thinned his cattle herd from 180 down to 65. It's bad right now. There were springs that have always run in my lifetime that are bone dry this year. 5 years into the worst drought to hit the Colorado River in 500 years, the picture appears bleakest at the headwaters, where the water is the most finite. This is where the West's 1,450-mile lifeline begins, in the Rocky Mountains northwest of Denver. This is also where a new front in the West water wars is most likely to erupt. So I'm going to make a little note right here. This is the worst drought to hit the Colorado River in 500 years. Now, that might just pass right by you, but I've got a series of articles in here about the Anasazi Indians. And it was just 500 years ago that they were destroyed from off the land because of drought. Now, it just so happens that about 500 years ago is when the Spanish came over here and started colonizing the New World. The Spanish. You know, the Israelites came over here. So God destroyed the Anasazis by using drought, opening the way a few years later for the Spanish to come over and colonize the Southwest. Well, that's right. Now, I'm sitting here reading Deuteronomy chapter 4, and God said, you know, you're not going to prolong your days upon the land, you Americans. You want to give me the finger now, and there's going to be an end to that. So I just kind of put the two stories together, and there's a little bit more to the story as we progress along here. I'm going to tell you about these Anasazis. And now I want to tell you one more thing. Out in the west, from the 100th Meridian, which is out here about the Kansas-Colorado line west, they have what they call the Prior Appropriation Water Doctrine. Because in drought countries, this comes from old Roman law, in drought countries like Saudi Arabia and so on, when you own the water source, you own the water. That's yours. Now, here where I'm at in Missouri, we practice riparian water rights. The water's mine while it's on my ground. But, you know, water is always moving. Water is always moving somewhere. It's going somewhere. And you can only use that water when you've got it. So here on my place, I've got several springs. And I own that water where it comes out of the ground. But, you know, if I can use it all, then that's fine. But if I can't use it all, well, then it runs down to the line with my neighbor, and then it runs into the fence, and then he gets it, and so on down the line. So we got these two water doctrines. And so we here in Missouri are sitting here telling you guys out in the West where you're practicing, you know, prior appropriation, that, hey, you got to release that water up there in Montana so that we can run our barges down here in Missouri. So that's a conflict. That's a conflict in water law. This rancher up here in Colorado owns that water at the headwaters, say. Now, further on down the river, you know, you guys are saying, in effect, that, hey, listen, if you hold that water up there for your use in Colorado, then we won't have that water for our use down here. Now, that Colorado River has, Congress came in here, and they established certain laws to regulate that river among the seven states that it borders on, or the watershed where the water comes from. And so that prior appropriation water doctrine has some holes in it. That's what you're reading here with this guy, Shoal, up there at the headwaters of the Colorado. See, he's entitled to 35 acre feet, or 35 cubic feet a second, but he's only taken 8. And he's leaving some of that for his neighbor downstream. Now, this is the worst drought to hit the Colorado River in 500 years. I would suspect that if you took a look at the Missouri River, it's probably the worst drought to hit the Missouri River in 500 years. That has some bad omens. You know, just think about it now. Bad omens. Growth on both sides of the mountains has tapped deeply into Colorado's share of its namesake river. Drought further reduced the pool, and the competition for what remains is intense. The threat of losing even more water to other states, a possibility if the dry spell deepens, has put many here on the defensive. The unrest in Colorado has further stirred unease downstream. Forced together to stretch the water supply through the drought, the 7 states that rely on the Colorado River are talking to one another, but warily. The wound of old feuds scratched open. Never far from the surface are pent-up frustrations about growth, the environment, or whether states should hoard their water or share it. Think about that. Pent-up frustrations about growth. See, if we practiced the Ten Commandments, I know this is a wild new idea, but think about this. If we practiced the Ten Commandments, we would be entitled to our share of the benefits that come from the covenant, the contract, which is rain in due season. So God then would have a duty, under the terms of the contract, to provide us with more and more water. So that as more and more people move into Arizona, and more people move into Las Vegas, etc., God would have to produce more water for the Colorado River in order to fulfill his half of the contract. So it would be common to have an average flow of 22 million feet. Now remember, we read that the average flow over 100 years has been 15 million acre feet a year. Some years it ran as high as 22 million feet. God would have a duty to provide an average of 22 million. Or, as time progresses, 44 million, double the size of it. But he doesn't have that corresponding duty if we don't perform on our side of the contract. I just want to share that with you. You people down there on the Gulf Coast now have a contract with the Creator of the universe. And he has a duty to provide you with rain in due season. Now, a hurricane that comes through here with Category 5 winds and destroys cities and wipes out, you know, with a flood here, wipes out your cities. Like Biloxi, you're not getting rain in due season, and it looks like you got a slap in the face. Now it's time to wake up down there, and instead of cursing God and saying, "Well, you know, God is at fault here," or "There is no God, and we evolved from green algae over here," you know, and sticking your finger in his eye, and you know. It's time to repent. That's the term used in the scripture. It's time to sit down and say, "Hey, listen, I think that we screwed up on our half of the contract. And maybe if we performed better on our half of the contract, we'd get better weather." I know it's a wild new concept, a wild new idea, but I thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. Now, we've been able to blissfully ignore all these things because it all looks so far off, said Stan Kazier, a Granby, Colorado attorney. Well, now we have to look at the past few years and say what everybody assumed was a dependable water supply maybe ain't so. Now, like I said, it isn't until the water actually goes off. It isn't until your well goes dry that you really get slapped up alongside the face, you know, alongside the head, as my old dad used to say, with reality. And when my well went dry here, you know, I'm sitting here going, "Oh, wait a minute." Now, I'm practicing the law, and you're sitting there saying, "Well, huh, God didn't provide you with water." Well, it did now. I drilled a new well. And I think that maybe we better be prepared for the worst over here, because I happen to live in a country with 300 million other people. Just like Elijah lived in a country with a bunch of other people. Now, Elijah was practicing the law. He said, I'm the last man in Israel to practice this law. And there was a drought there, a bad drought for about 3 or 4 years. And it had brought the nation to its knees. I mean, the whole country was suffering economically from this drought. And Elijah suffered right along with everybody else. You know, boys and girls, when it rains on all of us. And when it doesn't rain, it's just as dry on me as it is on you. The reason I'm bringing this to your attention is that I would like the rest of you guys over here to start performing on the contract. Now, last week I pointed out to you, we only need about, I don't know, 300,000 of us nationwide. If there was 300,000 people in this country that would obey God and keep His commandments, you know, I think that he wouldn't destroy us for the sake of those 300,000, according to His own testimony in the Scripture, you know, concerning Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, that was His idea, that He would save the whole place if there was 10 righteous. So I just extrapolated that out for you, remember, and I said, hey, listen, if we had one righteous guy out of every 10,000, just extrapolate that into the United States, we'd only need 300,000, and shucks, could be as few as 30,000, either 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000, if you'll remember the arithmetic, depending upon how many people lived in Sodom and Gomorrah, 100,000 or 10,000. I don't know. So I just kind of said, well, maybe we better plan on about 300,000 people, which is about, that's less than 100 people in every county in the United States. Now, you'd think that in your county, wherever you live in America, you'd think, I live in a county of about 10,000 people, and you'd think there'd be 100 people in this county. 100 that would obey God and keep His commandments. And yet, my gate out here is the only gate in this county that I've seen that has the Ten Commandments on it. And by the way, there's a law that requires you to post the Ten Commandments on your doorposts and on your gates. Did you know that? Now, if you want to get a sign here, and I mentioned this to you, I think it was last week's program, the Ten Commandments, if you call this number, 888-601-2345, got a pen and paper there? Write this down. It's 888-601-2345. Call that number, and this guy can sell you these signs, the Ten Commandments signs. I don't know what they are. They're only $4 or $5. It's about 2 feet by 3 feet, and I put it on my gate. And that sends me a signal, because here I can see, as I drive down the highway, how many people obey God and keep His commandments. Keep those two commandments. There's two laws in the Bible. One's in Deuteronomy 6, verse 9. Let's see if I got that right here. Deuteronomy 6, 9. Let me check that out and make sure that I'm not lying to you here. We're in chapter 4. I think it's 6, 9. Am I right? Be patient with me here. You shall write them upon the posts of your house and on your gates. Yep, 6, 9. Then there's a second place in here, and I don't have it cross-referenced, but I did in last week's program. Now, they've also got a web page. It's www.tencommandments.faithweb.com. These people have to be real lunatics. They make signs with the Ten Commandments on them. www.tencommandments.faithweb.com. And there it is, the Ten Commandments and a law that requires it. If we had 300,000 people in the United States of America that would practice this law, God Himself said, I wouldn't destroy that place for the sake of the 300,000. Boys and girls, I'm suspicious. I'm not sure that we've got one person in 100 in this country that practice the law. I don't think we've got 86 people in every county in the country that'll practice this law. Therefore, I suspect that we may be facing what the Anasazi Indians faced 500 years ago in the worst drought that we've seen since he destroyed the Anasazis from off the land. And remember, in Deuteronomy 4, he said, I will destroy you from off the land. Well, that makes me feel kind of bad. So I thought I'd bring that to your attention. Now, this guy, Crazer, works on water cases for ranchers, irrigation districts, and other small water users on the western slope. Some of his cases are black and white. That's my water, not yours. But water law is rarely that simple, and neither are water lawsuits. Kazier and his law partner do business out of a building next to an auto parts store on the highway coming into Granby. His office is filled with books and files and maps. He leaps up now and then to pull one off the shelf or out of a file cabinet, but most he uses as props to help explain his points. He can reel volumes of information off from memory. More of the potential cases brewing on the western side of the mountains involve the cities on the eastern side, or the Front Ridge, Crazier said. Denver and its growing suburbs are constantly on the prowl for more water, a search that's becoming more difficult. All right, now watch this. You live in Denver, Colorado, and you want to build some houses out here in a subdivision. You're a developer. You're a contractor. You're like I am. You want to make some money, and so you want to buy 10 acres over here off of Farmer Jones, and you want to build some houses. Don't you have to have water to those houses? Now, the city that you're building these houses in, they have to find some water someplace. And so they're buying water. If you can believe this, they're buying water and piping it in. They're buying water rights off of farmers and then using it for subdivisions on the east slope of the Rockies. That's on the Denver side. And they're bringing that water in from the west. I mean, they're piping it in. Can you believe that? And of course, those make jobs. You know, you construction workers out there that are building those houses, your jobs are dependent upon water that's going to be supplied to those houses. And that water has to come from someplace. Your jobs, boys and girls, depend upon water. And when there's a shortage of water, there's a shortage of building. And when there's a shortage of building, there's a shortage of jobs. And when there's a shortage of jobs, you know, pretty soon, you people are going to have to leave. Just like you left Oklahoma and Kansas and Colorado in the 1930s, you're going to have to move someplace else. Just like happened with you down there with Hurricane Katrina. After it was all over, you had to move out of New Orleans, and you had to get relocated somewhere else in the country. Houston, Texas, or Spokane, Washington. You got removed from out of your land. Now, you people down on the Gulf Coast know what it's like. And that's exactly what God told you. He says, I will remove you from out of the land. Want to give me the finger? Remember that phone number for the Ten Commandments now is 888-601-2345. That's www.tencommandments.faithweb.com. Why don't you get started? That's one law. Practice that one. Let's see if we can get started. Hey, I'm about out of time. I got to leave it right there. So let me give you a final reminder that you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We got to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.